The agenda for today's call, I want to spend a brief amount of time, certainly no more than a third of the call, and hopefully less than that, discussing the proposal on... the proposal on the conflict with national laws. And specifically, Olaf did sort of commingle, I guess, all of the statements and sent them out yesterday. And I just want to check up again on whether we think there's any changes needed to the text, because the next logical step, and something we'll try to do before the next call, in terms of advancing it, is to produce an interim or an initial, whatever, preliminary report, whatever it's called in the bylaws. Then we'll need to vote on that, which I'm hoping to do on the next call, as we discussed on our last call in terms of a time frame. That we had discussed possibly voting on this call, but I think we don't yet have that initial report put together, so we won't be able to vote at this point.
Aren't we missing a constituency statement, Gordon?
We are. The registrars have not yet submitted their constituency statement, so they will have up until 2 weeks from today in order to submit it if they want it to be in the initial report. Ross or Paul or Tom, do you think that you'll have a constituency statement 2 weeks from today?
Had you asked me yesterday, Jordan, I would have said absolutely yes, but it appears that there's been some confusion regarding the creation of our ballot. Which definitely needs to be straightened out, lest we vote on the wrong proposal.
Okay.
So I'm optimistic, but at the same time skeptical.
Right. Well, okay. Let me.
So a ballot went out today.
Yeah, but it was. Did another one go out this morning, Paul?
I only saw one.
Yeah, the one that went out was incorrect, but it didn't include the amendments that we'd put forward.
I see.
So
I voted yes anyway.
Oh, great.
But I don't really think it will matter.
Let's see.
Okay, well, so if you want it to be included in the initial report, then it needs to be in 2 weeks from today at the very latest. So, regardless, we will be voting on the initial report 2 weeks from today. So the real question today is, are there any changes that we need to make to the recommendations recommended procedure prior to putting it in the initial report? I know that a couple of constituencies had indicated that there might be some minor edits desired. So I'm just going to open up that question and ask if people would like to see any modifications made prior to incorporating this into the initial report. And this is specifically to the policy recommendations and to the recommended procedure.
This is on the notice question. So I'm sorry, Jordan.
No, this is on the conflict with national laws.
I see. Okay.
I know last time, I think Maggie had mentioned... Sorry, it's really loud here. I apologize. We had a little bit of interesting company news here this morning. So. I'm hearing silence, so that means that I'm going to go ahead and we'll prepare the initial report with the exact recommendation that Steve and Kathy had drafted in terms of policy recommendations and proposed procedure.
Run with it, Jordan.
I'm fine to do that. I just want to give people's chance to provide any feedback if they need to.
Well, I'm not sure if that's the right procedure. I mean, can we still change something so constituencies haven't seen? I mean, we probably should put out the report first and maybe make slight changes to it afterwards, right?
Yeah, that's correct. There will be a final opportunity to... After
right, because if
you
change something
comment.
Now, we might be voting on something that's not necessary anymore.
Exactly.
Right. So we better put it out now to speed up the whole process.
Yeah.
We might actually adopt something and get something accomplished.
Yeah.
Let's not forget that.
By the way, I just saw the news you mentioned. Congratulations.
I'm not sure I get congratulated for it, but we'll see what happens. For those that are curious, Register.com was acquired this morning. So.
Oh.
Congratulations.
Register.com got what?
Yes, that's correct.
It was acquired. By who?
By whom?
By Vector Capital.
Huh.
And you know now as much as I do. Okay. Well, that was an easy agenda item then. I will go ahead. My goal is going to be to, I'll work with Olaf. I've already put together a draft of the initial report myself, but I'll work with Olaf to make sure that it's going to meet whatever the staff wants to do with it as well. And my goal is going to be to get that out to the task force within a week, so there will be a week to review it on list and refine the report before we vote on it a week from today.
Thank you.
Okay, great. So moving right along then, next thing I wanted to review on the, that we had on the agenda for today is to talk about the purpose of who is, and the purpose of the various contacts. We're going to do it in that order. I don't know how far we'll get in terms of talking about the purpose of who is. Hopefully we'll get through both of these topics. We have constituency statements now, I believe, from every constituency except for the registrars on this, on the topic of the purpose of who is.
No, the registry statement will be ready in about a week.
Oh, okay. Oh, you guys just submitted a statement. I thought you had. I'm so confused. So you submitted a statement on the conflicts, but not on the purpose.
That's right.
Who is. Is that right? Okay. Okay. So we have constituency statements from the user constituencies, but not from the provider constituencies, I guess. Which is interesting. But I would still like today to at least start to talk about some of the concepts there. And I think even if we don't have the statements, we can, hopefully the task force representatives can provide fair feedback representing the views of their constituencies. So Olaf, as I mentioned earlier, sent out yesterday a document that, I guess, just Olaf, you just included all of the constituency statements in one big document, is that right?
Simple copy-paste exercise, no intelligence at all.
I'm sorry I couldn't hear Olaf, could you please speak up?
Yes, I'm on a speakerphone, but I'll approach the mic. Well, yes, it was a simple copy-paste exercise on what actually at the links I received from Glenn. Thank you, Glenn. And no intelligence added on top of that at all.
Okay, it may actually be. I'm just looking through what we what I have here. I think we don't actually have the BC constituency statement either.
And Jordan, can I add that from the non-commercial constituency, you only have a purpose statement and not a contact statement?
Correct. So we may actually be tough to talk about contacts today. Although we may try, but I'd like to at least start to talk about the purpose of who is. What I'd ask, maybe we have three constituency statements at this point, to start with those, and maybe just have the reps from those constituencies give a brief, like 1 to 2 minute overview of their view of the purpose of who is, and then certainly if other constituency reps have any insight into what the views of their constituency are, I'd encourage them to give some initial feedback as well, and then we could start to see if there's common areas or where the areas of disagreement are. So maybe I'll just do this by order of submission. So Nicholas, can you just give us a minute or two on the conclusions that the IPC made about the purpose of who is?
Sure, Jordan. So you mean on the general purpose?
Yeah, just not the context, but the general purpose of who is.
Well, in it's a short constituency statement. In the IPC's view, basically the WHOIS database has always included the requirement to provide the public with ready access
to the identity and the contact information for domain name registrants. And what we state in our constituency statement is that we think that that purpose has never changed, and that registrants have always been on notice of this purpose, regardless of when they registered their domains. In our statement, we also point out that this purpose is fully consistent with the contextual factors that are listed in the in our terms of reference in its paragraph one. And in attachment to our constituency statement, we've put a background paper that we have drawn up, basically with further documentation of our conclusion. It's a background paper that is basically it's a 10-pager, and we go over specific national situations, such as in Europe with regard to the 1995 European Data Protection Directive. We also look at the Canadian Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act, and the Canadian, let me see here, the Canadian Personal Information Protection and Electronic Documents Act.
Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah. Then we also look at other international and national laws that relate specifically to WHOIS services. And we also address the changing nature of registered name holders. And in the end, we try to go back all the way to 1982 and basically during the days of ARPANET, the Department of Defense precursor to today's internet, and we look at how WHOIS was considered at that time. And so it's a 10-pager that is attached to our constituency statement.
Great, thanks.
That's about it, Gordon.
Okay, I'm going to just. Are there any questions of clarification for Nicholas about?
Yeah, I have one.
Yeah, go ahead, Milton.
Nicholas, you said that WHOIS has always included some concept of the identity of the domain registrant. What was that doesn't really answer the question of the purpose. Why? What was the purpose of getting the domain registrant's identity?
Well, we've tried to be careful in this distinction that you have often emphasized, Milton, that we shouldn't confuse the use that is made of WHOIS data by different constituencies, different interests, and the actual purpose. Mm-hmm. But we have considered that the very idea of making this data publicly available was the purpose of the of the WHOIS database ever since their inception, basically. But we've tried to clearly distinguish between use and purpose, and only discuss purpose, because I think that's a confusion that has been done in the past, and that you had correctly pointed out many times, Milton.
Okay, thanks. So Nicholas, maybe to clarify that, so your view would be that the IPC's view would be that the purpose of WHOIS is to provide access to you.
Yeah,
to that contact information, regardless of what the intended use is.
That's right.
That
it's
right.
Really to provide the public with ready access to identity and contact information. That's right.
Okay.
I have a question. It's Kathy.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Nicholas, regarding the background paper, for a long time, the intellectual property constituency has held a position, and I may be misinterpreting, so please clarify, that national laws did not apply to the WHOIS data, or frankly to ICANN, particularly national privacy laws. What I read loudly and clearly from the paper is that they do, is that there's very much a sense that the EU Privacy Directive does apply, and that the registrars and everyone else in ICANN is properly concerned about national privacy laws. Is that right? It seems to be a change, and I just wanted to note it.
Well, I haven't been around for long to say whether there has been a change, but one thing is for sure, That is that the 1995 Data Protection Directive is applicable to who is. That I would definitely say. Now, what is meant by applicable and what the consequences of this applicability are, we might have differing point of views about, but clearly we're talking about personal data. We're not talking about sensitive data, but we're talking about personal data, and I would say that the 1995 Data Protection Directive applies, yeah.
Jordan, may I follow up?
Yeah.
In that case, thank you. That makes perfect sense to me. In that case, in the preparation of the background paper, there's kind of a preface that says something about, you know, taking a shot at the EU Privacy Directive. In preparing the background, did you consider the statements that have been filed by the EU regarding the WHOIS? The Article 29 Working Group has provided a scholarly opinion. There was an EU paper to the GAC. The International Working Group on Data Protection and Telecommunications has also filed. Were these things considered as you prepared your background paper, where this is kind of the data protection officials' interpretation of their own laws in the WHOIS data?
Well, I would say that it's their interpretation of their own laws, but at the same time, what I would question what you said is that it's not the EU position. The Article 29 Working Party is an informal group that gathers the data protection commissioners from the 25 member states of the EU, and they adopted this document. But it doesn't mean that it's the official view of the EU. In a sense, to answer questions about the applicability of what exactly the Data Protection Directive means when it comes to who is, basically the only one who could really talk for the EU to a full extent would be the Court of Justice, and to a lesser extent it would be the European Commission. But basically we should remember that the Article 29 Working Party is an advisory group to which the European Commission is basically taking care of the Secretariat, but we can't consider it as the view of the European Union as a whole.
But I've been told that since, and you know much more about this, but I've been told that since the data protection commissioners are quasi-judicial, meaning that that they will be presiding over complaints that are brought, they cannot go any further than the statements that they made, which basically say, watch out, be careful, there's a real problem here. I've been told they can't go any further than that because they're going to sit and decide on the complaints, and that we've been given a very clear picture. And so I just wanted to know whether, you know, why that wasn't included. And I guess you've given me the answer, but it seems that would have been relevant to the background paper as well.
I'm not quite sure I follow your question. What do you mean exactly?
Oh, let me phrase it this way. The non-commercial constituency will be putting together kind of a parallel background paper that talks about where the data protection commissioners from the EU and other countries have come out, because they have submitted extensively to ICANN on the WHOIS. So we'll be issuing just a parallel background paper.
Great. That's helpful, Kathy. And I think both of these background papers, obviously, would, when we have a report on this topic, would be incorporated into that report. So, and it may be that the task force may also take some or all of the papers under advisement and incorporate parts of it into the report proper, or may just help us guide our decision-making process. Any other questions for Nicholas? Okay, great. I'm going to move on then. I think the second submission we had was from the ISPs. I think we have Greg on the call. Is that right?
That's right.
Greg, can you give us the 1 or 2 minute summary of the ISP position on this?
Well, it'll be very short because I don't have that paper in front of me right now.
Okay.
But general, so due to the marvels of wireless communication, I'm able to actually speak with you when I'm not at my desk. The ISP position has always been that we need the data to be, to provide the service to our customers, and in particular, to when we are trying to track down the perpetrators of illegal or antisocial behavior or inappropriate use of the network, we need to know contact information. We need to know who we're dealing with and how to get a hold of them. And that's what we use the information for. That's what we always use it for, and that's why we need to have as much information as exists there.
Okay. Greg, I'm going to, since you don't have the paper in front of you, I'm going to read I've extracted a couple key gems, I guess, from the ISP constituency statement. I'm just going to read for the members of the task force. And if you think I'm extracting anything that doesn't convey the overall sense of the position, just let me know. But there is the constituency statement starts off saying that the WHOIS database serves the purpose of providing contact information to the public regarding the individual or organization that has registered a domain. Goes on to say, regardless of the vast growth of the number of domain registrations, some core principles should remain unchanged, and ready access to all WHOIS data is one such principle. A little further down, it says, despite the confusion over the use versus purpose, in fact, both are dependent on the type of notice that is provided at the time of registration. If adequate notice is provided regarding the intended purpose of data collection, then all uses, but nothing more, consistent with that notice, shall be valid. So that's interesting. That, I guess, ties into our previous work on notice to a certain extent. And then it goes on to list a number of specific purposes, which I'll enumerate for the task force, which are number one, to research and verify domain registrants that could vicariously cause liability for ISPs because of illegal, deceptive, or infringing content. Number two, to prevent or detect sources of security attacks of their networks and services, networks and servers. Number three, to identify sources of consumer fraud, spam, and denial of service attacks and incidents. Number four, to effectuate UDRP proceedings. And number five, to support technical operations of ISPs or network administrators. So those are...
That about covers it, yeah. That's elaboration of what I said, yeah.
Yeah, okay, great. I just wanted to... I think there are a few interesting concepts there that would help everyone to be aware of. Any questions for Greg?
Yeah, Greg.
Oh, I'm going to take a cue then. It sounds like we have a couple of people. Ken, Milton, anyone else?
Yeah, I've got something for you, Jordan, actually, so I'll go last.
Okay, Ross. Okay, go ahead, Ken.
Yeah, I hope you can hear me okay. I'm having a bit of trouble understanding what I see as a contradiction in some ways between the statements that were made there and let's take, for example, Verizon's aggressive defense of the suit filed by the Recording Industry Association, where they refused to allow access to their user information in a suit where there was an argument that users were illegally downloading copyrighted content. It would seem to me that there is a strong need for the ability to be able to deal with administrative and technical issues with regard, but as far as registrant information, if there, I just don't know whether it should be out in the open. If somebody has a legitimate right to access, I feel that they need to be able to indicate exactly what that right is, that they're basing the need for access to specific registrant data on.
Okay, Greg, before you answer that, I want to try to limit questions right now to questions of clarification relating to the statements, and we can talk about some of the policy issues in a moment, but to the extent that...
I'm sorry, Jordan, I didn't mean to go off the reservation.
Yeah, no problem, but to the extent that you've already, that's already out there, Ken, I guess, Greg, if you want to respond or if you want to defer it, I leave it up to you.
Well, first of all, if registrants are notified that we're going to access the data that they type in, then I think that they've given their express consent to the access to that data. And but so that But there's a distinction here between what's accessible by the general public and what needs to be accessed by the service providers who need to maintain sort of a law and order on the network. We need to have as much data as we need to help prevent fraudulent activities and help law enforcement and prevent spam and so forth. But as I say, if you've got a consent statement, you know, up front when the registrar supply that data, then I think that's appropriate.
Okay, great. Milton?
Yeah, and this, as always for me, is a question of clarification. Greg, did you reference ICANN's mission anywhere in your statement?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't remember doing that part of it. No.
So but you would recognize that as part of the task force's request,
of
wouldn't
course.
You?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I was just curious as to how you linked your concepts of the usefulness of the data to the mission.
Well, stability. You know, we're trying to promote internet stability, and when you've got people who are perpetrating frauds and spam and so forth, that threatens the stability of the network.
Well, we don't want to debate that, but what when you talk about you can notify people and then do anything you like, how does that relate to ICANN's mission?
Let's look at the contrary. Suppose that I shouldn't be allowed to divulge people's who is information, or that shouldn't be accessible by the general public or to the ISPs. How does that relate to the ICANN's mission? How does preventing the release of data relate to ICANN's mission?
Repeat that question after we've given you our talk about our statement. Okay, it'll be relevant.
Well, you will answer that. Okay, good.
I will.
Fine. Good.
Okay. I actually have, before Ross has his question for me, I have one quick question for you, Greg, which is, you mentioned that you think that there may be a distinction between the, you know, what ISPs need and what the general public needs.
Right, we've already
sure
been in favor. Yeah,
I'm not sure that's clear from the statement. Do you think that there's part of your statement that indicates that what ISPs need might be different than what sort of Joe Smith on the street needs?
Well, I guess we didn't really want to, in that statement, deal with a tiered access concept, but we are in favor, as you know, we've always been in favor of the tiered access approach.
Right. So your view is that this is the purpose really relating to to ISPs' needs in particular. It's not the general...
Yeah, it's
the same
about how the data gets used. Yeah,
yeah,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a question.
Okay, Ross, are you still okay with additional questions to Greg before I...
Yeah, I've just got a question about the agenda. So
yeah, no problem. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead, Paul.
Do the ISPs, and what's your opinion on what the ISPs need? Do they need to know the identity of the registrant, or do they just need to contact the registrant? Do they absolutely need to know their identity, or can they just have a method of contacting the registrant?
Well, the more information we have, the more we are able to deal with inappropriate use of the network, whether it's fraudulent or spam or, you know, other things of that sort. We're also often asked to assist law enforcement, and they want to know the identity of the user.
Yeah, I understand the law enforcement point of view. I'm talking about the ISP point of view.
Well, our point of view can't really be divorced from the law enforcement point of view because they can shut us down, you know. So we have to play ball with them.
Well,
Okay, Russell, I'll turn the mic over to you for either a question or a or to Greg or to myself.
I'll continue with my question to you, Jordan.
Sure.
During your kind of overview of the ISPC position, you touched on the question of notice. Now, I've noticed some chatter around that particular work, and I think it may be worthwhile either adding a brief point of discussion on the notice provisions to this agenda or to a future agenda of this task force before we let it get too far down the field at council level.
I'm sorry.
Is that possible?
I'm completely spaced out. I actually realized I started talking about the agenda and immediately jumped into our first item.
Now I'm taking a right-hand turn directly back to where we started.
Yeah, let me ask, Glenn, when's the next council meeting?
On the 18th of August.
The 18th of August. And are they scheduled to vote on the notice proposal at that time?
They are scheduled to vote on the notice proposal.
Okay, Ross, I'll try to add at least 15 minutes
okay,
of discussion to that to the end of this call.
Great.
Okay. Any other questions for Greg?
Yeah, I have a question, Kathy.
Okay, Kathy.
Greg, on the technical concerns of the ISPs, the networks and servers, were listed technical operations issues. I don't know if this is possible to answer, but when you contact the registrars for the information, are you working closely with the registrar so that if there's a technical problem, you get the domain name or the IP address and you shut it down quickly? Is that working well on the technical side, on getting technical problems taken down quickly?
We want to work closely with the registrars. I think it's working. I think our relationship with the registrars is good. We don't peremptorily just shut people down or ask the registrars to do that, but when the need arises, we certainly work well with the people we've dealt with. Yeah.
Okay.
If I could add to that, Kathy, if Jordan would permit me to add to that.
Yeah, certainly, Russ.
I get the sense from Greg's comments, and this was kind of my hemming and hawing earlier, I get the sense from Greg's comments that they're really looking to be a one-stop shop for law enforcement. And when they're talking about providing customer information from the WHIS to law enforcement, it's really related to fulfilling that request. Whether or not it's appropriate to fill that request is debatable. It would certainly be my preference that if the ISP doesn't have the data, that they would forward the request to the party that has the data. But that's
absolutely
another story entirely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, it's just that we are the ones who get called first. We don't want to be one-stop shop per se, but we're the ones who get contacted first about, well, there's something bad going on, you better stop it, or we realize it ourselves. Our monitoring of the network traffic.
But it looks like you can divide the set of problems into technical and content.
Yeah, right.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Any other questions for Greg? Okay, if not, we'll move on to the non-commercial constituency statement. Milton or Kathy, do you want to give us a brief overview?
Yeah, I'll start and overview the statement and then see if Kathy wants to add anything, if that's okay with people.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, that's fine, Milton.
What we do is first have a paragraph about the importance of defining purpose. We point out that there's a well-established sort of way of thinking about purpose in data protection law, that the purpose of data and data collection processes must be well defined before you define policies regarding data collection use and access, that this is done in order to protect data subjects from abuse by either the data collectors or third parties, and that a definition of purpose is basically a constraint. It's something that says how you're going to limit use and access to the data. So then we talk about ICANN's mission and core values, and we point out that its mission is primarily technical. We also point out that the first three core values seem to be most relevant to this discussion, the first core value being preserving and enhancing operational stability, reliability, security, and global interoperability, the second being respecting creativity, innovation, and flow of information by limiting ICANN's activities to those matters within ICANN's mission requiring significantly benefiting from global coordination, and the third relevant core value being, to the extent feasible and appropriate, delegating coordination functions or recognizing the policy role of other responsible entities that reflect the interests of affected parties. So given those missions and core values of ICANN, we believe that the clear purpose of the WHOIS protocol, both historically and today, is fundamentally to provide a point of contact to resolve technical problems. And we call attention to the need to recognize the policy role of other responsible entities so that when you say that ICANN should limit itself to X, you're not saying that Y, Z, and A, B, and C shouldn't be done. You're simply saying that maybe other people should be doing that. So we propose a specific definition of purpose, which is a fairly short, about a paragraph long. Fundamentally, it says it's to provide to third parties an accurate and authoritative link between a domain name and a responsible party who can act to resolve or reliably pass information to those who can resolve technical problems associated with or caused by the domain. We try to define technical problems, and then we also provide a list of what we consider excluded or invalid purposes. In other words, once you've defined the purpose, there's also things that are clearly not the purpose. One of those excluded is global data mining. You know, it's very convenient, and as a social science researcher, it's wonderful to have all kinds of data like this that's available, but that is definitely not the purpose. It's not to facilitate legal or other kinds of retribution by those interested in pursuing companies and individuals who criticize or compete against them. And finally, the purpose of WHOIS is not to expand the surveillance powers or enforcement powers given to law enforcement or to bypass protections and limitations imposed by governments to prevent the abuse and misuse of personal data, even by law enforcement. So basically, our fundamental line is that the published WHOIS data should serve only the original purpose, which is the technical coordination and interoperability functions of ICANN, and additional access should be and can be regulated in other ways.
Thanks, Milton. Kathy, did you want to add anything to that?
I think Milton did a great job. Only the little reference in here to Vint Cerf confirming that the original purpose of WHOIS was purely technical. And that's within the statement. That's it.
Thanks, Kathy. Any questions for Milton or Kathy? Wow, okay. You guys get off easy.
Oh, wait. Greg had a question. He said something about...
Oh, should we reincarnate Greg's question from before?
Maybe Greg wants to, or maybe he doesn't.
Well,
I
just mentioned stability. Stability, of course, stability of the network is a... arguably a technical use of the data.
Yeah, I think actually, Milton, your statement specifically refers to operational statement as being something related to technical problems. Is that right?
Yeah, I do have disagreements with people who would present fraud, for example, as a security and stability issue with the Internet. To some extent, if you're talking about spoofing domains and things, that is a security issue of the Internet. But in many respects, the Internet is working just fine when I respond to a phishing email, in the sense that the packets are going and I'm inputting them and they're going from receiver to recipient. That's really a policy and law enforcement issue, and it's not, fundamentally part of ICANN's mission to prevent all forms of fraud associated with the Internet. I think most people agree with that. I think that ICANN is not the ultimate arbiter of e-commerce. That's something that other entities have responsibility for. To the extent that those other entities tell ICANN, you must do this, then ICANN obviously should comply with the law, but the purpose of who is within ICANN's mission is really hasn't anything to do with law enforcement per se.
That's a great
And in fact,
question.
Just the opposite. It's a core value of ICANN to delegate where appropriate to other responsible entities the policies, and nothing could be more policy-oriented than a lot of these content issues.
Okay, and I think I'll maybe try to reincarnate Greg's earlier question, which is, Milton, in your view, or the view of the NCUC with regards to the statement, how would excluding or not displaying the broadest possible range of whois data meet the ICANN's core mission?
Well, again, you go back to that concept of purpose in data protection law, that if you say your purpose is to resolve technical problems associated with the domain name system or the IP address system, then any data that's not absolutely necessary to fulfill that purpose shouldn't be posted, certainly shouldn't be made available to third parties. I mean, that's just the way it's done. You don't say, oh, somebody might possibly find this information useful in some conceivable way or some way we can't even think of, so we're going to collect it and display it anyway. If you're dealing with this concept of a purpose of a database, then you say, in order to resolve technical problems, we need the following information, X, Y, Z. That's what we're going to collect, no more, no less.
Okay, thanks, Milton. Any other questions before we move on?
Gordon, I just want to David Ferris, I joined, sorry, I had the wrong code. I was traveling.
Welcome, David. And David, am I correct that do we have business constituency statements on the purpose of WHOIS yet?
I thought that maybe, is Marilyn not on?
She's not on, no.
I thought maybe that preliminary sent out. I will confirm with the Secretariat what the status is, because I know that there's one circulating that we prepared and shared membership, so I don't know why it hasn't been posted, but I'll follow up and let you know.
Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, I can't see anything. I don't believe I've seen anything on the. And you didn't see it last night, Olaf, when you were gathering your summary. There's nothing from the BC here, so you didn't see it either. Is that correct, Olaf?
Not within my horizon or line of sight, at least.
Okay. So let me ask this then. I would like to see if any of the other constituencies, the registries, registrars, or the BC, has any just sort of high-level comments or views on the purpose that you'd like to share before we jump into a discussion of some of these topics.
Registry constituency would like to make a comment or two.
Yeah, sure. So why don't you go ahead and do that, David?
Okay. The constituency is preparing a statement, and fundamentally we agree that with the non-commercial constituency and I believe also with the service providers, there's no need to make all of this information public, that the original purpose was purely technical and that touchstones. But I, in preparing the draft of our comments circulating within the constituency, I read over the intellectual property backgrounder and their comments and concerns that there's a complete distortion of the European Commission position set forth in the intellectual property backgrounder. It's a distortion that really amounts to deception, saying that the European Commission supports the total public availability of personal data is so grossly out of order with what the European Commission said that it's ludicrous. And I think that the intellectual property constituency should consider withdrawing its statements. It's really that bad, and I have some reasons for doing that. The commission statement that's cited in the backgrounder and there's a footnote, which incidentally is erroneous. The statement is actually at a different URL, and if anyone needs to know that, I'd be happy to provide it. The working party opinion says, among other things, it's essential to limit the amount of personal data to be collected and processed. They say the registration of domain names raises different legal consideration than that of companies or other legal persons, which we agree with. Then they say, in the light of the proportionality principle, it is necessary to look for less intrusive methods that would still serve the purpose of the WHOIS directories without having all data directly available online. Then they conclude, old print, the working party encourages ICANN and the WHOIS community to look at privacy-enhancing ways to run the WHOIS directories in a way that serves its original purpose whilst protecting the rights of individuals. And it's possible for individuals to register domain names without their personal details appearing on a publicly available register, unquote. Now, the European Commission has obviously made it very clear what their view is, and it is 180 degrees out of sync with what the intellectual property constituency has represented it to be. And I'm happy to hear that the intellectual property constituency believes that the EC does apply. I recognize there are no court cases on it yet. Perhaps the thing to do is to bring a case and so that we get it. At any rate, that is my view.
Okay, any questions of clarification for David?
Oh, this is David.
Yeah, David, go ahead.
I would just like to see clarification because I'm not sure that there is a unified European Commission position on this. We've heard from the data protection group, now been moved to DG Justice, but we haven't really heard from law enforcement and some of the others, and I have asked the Europeans whether there is an interagency process going on to develop a unified and coordinated position, and as of right now, that process is not taking place. So I just don't think that we have an EU position on this issue.
Excuse me, Jordan, could I sign in?
Yes, certainly. Let me allow David to briefly respond, and then Suzanne.
What I was responding to is the use of the Article 29 Working Party opinion in 2000, which was the basic support of the intellectual property constituency argument that the EC supports public availability. That's when it's entirely clear that statement supports exactly the opposite. That's the problem.
Yeah, I'd like to hear from the IPC on the question, Jordan.
Let me hold off on this discussion until we get to more of the substance, because I do want to make sure we get the views of all the constituencies before we get into a sort of back and forth discussion of this.
Well, we'll definitely come back to this.
Yeah, yes. I'll put it at the top of our next bit of the agenda. Suzanne.
Thank you. First, let me open with apologies because we, the GAC, have not yet typed up a report of the WHOIS / law enforcement working session that we had in Luxembourg, but we fully intend to finalize a report that will be made publicly available to the ICANN community. I just wanted to refresh people's memories that we did have that session for quite a deliberate purpose, and that was to better educate, primarily, in fact, the GAC itself, to better understand what the range of public policy uses are of WHOIS data, and that particular session did focus on law enforcement in particular. So I'm hopeful that the report of that session will be helpful to you all in your work, because I think it was certainly educational for a lot of the GAC members who often have not been in a position for a variety of reasons to undertake the outreach with different parts of the government in Capitol that might have a different perspective on access to who is data than, say, a privacy perspective. We do also intend to work with the community to try to pull together a similar workshop in Vancouver, but it's very preliminary preparations right now, to focus on some of the other public policy aspects of the use of who is data, whether it's consumer protection, IP, and privacy protection. But I did just want to flag the fact that we have focused on law enforcement for a very particular reason. And I think it was very useful to point out that certainly from several government perspectives, it's not a question of competing public policy values, it's complementary public policy objectives. Thanks.
Thanks, Suzanne. Any other questions of clarification for David?
Nicholas here. I would
go ahead,
hear where the quote I think David was reading from, he was cutting off from time to time. Where did this quote come from that he read out?
It comes from the Article 29 Working Party document.
From the opinion of the Article. Okay.
The same one that was quoted by the intellectual property constituency in support of their position. And I'll circulate the accurate URL, the one in your background hasn't resolved.
Thanks, David.
I would... nothing.
Ross,
I would like to continue biting my tongue.
Okay, do either the registrars or the BC, are you in a position to make any sort of provisional statement about the view of your constituency?
I can give you a broad, informal, don't tie me down to it, but I'm not sure that that's useful. If that's what you guys want, I'm happy to do it, but...
I think it's up... if you don't think it's useful, Ross, then I'm not certainly not going to twist your arm.
And this is David. What type of information are you looking for? Since I joined late, I'm not really sure what others have.
They've just been basically giving their case is a little easier because they've had constituency statements to refer to, but they've just been giving basically a 1 or 2 minute summary of sort of the view of their constituency. And it sounds like if you guys already have a statement that is in draft or almost ready, you know, if you care to summarize any of the sort of high points, that might be helpful for us to frame the rest of the conversation.
Well, I'll try and do that, and just with the caveat that might change because I'm speaking from a draft. basically, we recognize that WHOIS may have originally been conceived as a database of technical contacts, but the internet has evolved so to the purpose of the WHOIS database. And with that in mind, I mean, we have a fairly broad definition being circulating database of contact information, contact the registrar, agents, enable the prompt resolution for legal matters relating to registrar.
I'm sorry, but I can hardly hear him. He's like cutting in and out. Is that just everyone?
Yeah, is it a cell phone you're on?
Yeah, no, I was on a speaker, but is this better?
Much better.
Okay, I picked up the handset. So it's a general definition, given that short background. A database of contact information sufficient to contact the registrant or their agent to enable the prompt resolution of technical, legal, and other matters relating to the registrant's registration and use of its domain name. That's the tentative definition that's circulating among the membership.
David, can you read that one more time for me?
A database of contact information sufficient to contact the registrant or their agent to enable the prompt resolution of technical, legal, and other matters relating to the registrant's registration and use of its domain name.
Okay, great. Any questions of clarification for David?
Yeah, I have one, Jordan.
Yeah, Tom, go ahead.
Do you have a definition of what you would call an agent?
Generally the definition of an agent is someone acting on behalf of the registrant.
So, for example, I would imagine it would be a service, an ISP, or an anonymizing company, etc.
Okay. So, a point of contact would be fine with your constituency?
Pardon me?
I'm just trying to figure out what exactly that means. So, if you say you don't have to put the real data in there anymore, but a point of contact, for example, would be sufficient. Is that what you're saying by saying you can use an agent as well?
No, it's hard for me to answer that, but it's just someone acting on behalf of the registrant.
I would recommend, David, that if that's what you mean by the use of the term agent, that you actually use a different term. Agency has a very, very strict legal definition, requires some sort of contractual relationship, and creates all sorts of benefits and liabilities for each party.
Right.
Somebody simply providing DNS to a registrant and giving them, and being their technical contact doesn't fulfill that agency requirement.
Okay, I'll take that.
You may want to look into that a little bit further. It was confusing me as well, so thanks for that explanation.
Sure, I'll take that information back to the PC.
I had a question, David. You still there?
I'm here.
You said for the resolution of technical, legal, and I'm missing the third part, was it basically any other problem?
And other matters relating to the registrant's registration and use of its domain name.
Okay, so basically, I mean, as you could probably predict, we think that's too broad, but in order to make it a coherent definition of purpose, regardless of whether we agree or disagree on it, is there any way you could specify use in a way that is more in line with ICANN's mission? In other words, the fact that I'm using a domain to, say, criticize you, does that mean you have a right to my contact data?
I would argue that if it's something that is in the context of the use of the domain name, that yes, because you are holding yourself out to the public through the use of the domain name.
Right, but is that really within ICANN's mission? Is that something that ICANN is about? Or do you see ICANN as being that?
I'm not asking ICANN to be the arbiter of it, of that. So I'm not asking to have the WHOIS data, or the BC isn't asking to have the WHOIS data to go back to ICANN to have ICANN help us resolve the issue. But it is related to ICANN's function because you get your, with the, ICANN is the administrator of the domain name system, and that's the way the person is getting the domain name, through that administration.
Can I ask for a clarification on that, please?
Yeah, go ahead, Ross.
David, I would, so within that position then, is the business constituency not making a distinction between the use of a domain registration, i.e. publication of content, and the actual DNS system itself? I.e. the registration and resolution of those domain names?
Are we not making a distinction?
Correct.
Well, I think there is somewhat of a distinction because the resolution of the domain name, that is a function directly related to ICANN.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you would use the WHOIS data to then be able to go back to ICANN and resolve the issue. But you, as I said before, as the administrator of the domain name system, the registrant is dependent on ICANN for the obtaining its domain name, and therefore has the WHOIS data is related to that in some way. But I'm not going to be going to ICANN to resolve an issue of content on the website. That answer your question, Ross?
But yet that information should be available for content-related contact reasons.
I would argue yes, and I believe the BC would, but I can say from my own perspective, I would argue yes.
Right. I would
you know, I would make a suggestion that the more appropriate disclosure of data would be that by the ISPs to publish their customer lists when they're allowing their customers to communicate over the web. But,
okay. We'll take that thought into the discussion part, Ross. any other questions of clarification for David? Okay, we have a fairly limited amount of time left since we need to block up a little time to talk about the notice proposal at the end of the call. I want to allocate a few minutes now to briefly talk about the issue, to return to this issue of what the EU says, if we have any further discussion there. And then I briefly want, there's a few, I want to identify a list of, I guess, topics for further discussion relating to the purpose, and I think I've identified a few, but maybe other people have some input as well, and hopefully we can take those onto the list and hash some of them out. So let me first of all, let's return to this topic of what the EU thinks for a few minutes. I want to limit this to about 5 minutes. I think when I cut this off previously, Ross, you had asked if the IPC has a view on, I wasn't 100% sure what you were asking the IPC for at that point.
Well, I think David asked a very, very specific question, and I didn't get a clear sense of an answer from the IPC, so I was hoping that they could answer that a little bit more clearly, but you know, I'm not sure whether or not we want to have that entire conversation on this call or not.
Jordan, can I respond?
Oh, absolutely, Nicholas.
Yeah. Well, I quickly checked the quote. If we have made a mistake in the quote we made in the background paper, I looked for it, and I think what David referred to as a quote from the Article 29 Working Party is a quote that we find on page 7 of our background paper, and I quickly went to the European Commission website and from there to the Article 29 Working Party, and I think the quote we have here is perfectly correct. Now, I mean, if there is a mistake, please, David, it would be very useful if you send it to the task force list, because right now I don't really see what we have misinterpreted here. Otherwise, when it comes to the European Data Protection Directive, the 1995 directive, I think one thing is to say that the 1995, this is what we discussed with Casey in the, towards the beginning of this call. One thing is to say that the article, that the 1995 Data Protection Directive is applicable. It is, of course. But another question is to define what this applicability actually means. And I think one confusion that is made quite often with regard to the 1995 Data Protection Directive is a belief that basically any processing of personal data is prohibited. And basically, if you look at the directive, the only kind of personal data that in any case can't really be processed is sensitive data, such as sexual orientation, ethnic origin, political belief, and so on. And there is none of this in WHOIS databases. We are talking about personal data, granted, we're not talking about sensitive data. And I think what David also mentioned and seemed to question, correct me if I'm wrong, David, but was the fact that what we point out in the background paper is that the 1995 directive actually provides for a lot of flexibility. And one article that we are specifically mentioning is Article 7 of this directive, which indeed foresees that sometimes processing can be necessary for the purposes of the legitimate interest pursued by the controller or by the third party that basically processes the personal data. And I think this is something we wanted to point out in our submission. But if you feel that our submission was biased, as you seem to suggest, please, I would really need more explanation of what you actually mean by that and what specifically you think is wrong. Now, there are two Davids on the call, so I'm referring here to David Maher.
Now, when it comes to David Farris, I think he makes a very valid point when he says that actually there is no EU position as such on the application of the Data Protection Directive to WHOIS databases. What we have is an opinion that was adopted in 2003 by the Article 29 Working Party, which, as we said towards the beginning of this call, is a body that gathers data protection commissioners from the 25 member states. It has an advisory status, but it is not the view of the EU as such. And so that's basically the only comments I have at this stage. Now, as Ross said, maybe this is not exactly the right moment to have an extensive conversation about this, but I think it's useful to have, for example, on the list, because I feel that there are clearly question marks that David Meyer put forward.
I can answer very briefly. I think that my position is that your statement is deceptive and it's a distortion. You cite the Article 29 working paper for the proposition that it clearly outlines the purpose of WHOIS. The mistake in your backgrounder is not the quote itself. The quote is accurate. The citation, the URL that you put in the backgrounder is wrong, and I've corrected that by sending it to the list. But that's a minor detail. The real problem is that you cite the paper, the proposition that it explains the purpose of WHOIS. What you omit is the abundantly clear statement further in the paper, and I've sent this out to the group as well, that says that the purpose is exactly the opposite of what you say it is. That's the problem.
I'm going to suggest that, and I'll allow one or two other brief comments if people really think it's necessary. But David, if you've sent the URL to the full Article 29 papers,
and I've also sent out the quotes that I read.
Right. So what I would hope we could do is have people review the full paper and read the IPC background paper. I think Kathy mentioned the NCUC is going to put together a similar paper. But my guess is we'll probably have a slightly different point of view, and to get that all of that data in front of people so that they can make sort of intelligent and reasoned analysis on our own, and either have this discussion on list or defer it until people have had a chance to read that further. But having said that, if anyone feels they have some burning comment they need to make before we wrap this up, allow one or two briefly.
Kathy.
Kathy, anyone else?
Okay,
go ahead. Very briefly, Kathy.
It sounds like Nicholas is willing to work with David Maher, and David Maher sounds like he's willing to work with Nicholas. We have the allegations on the table that this is a deceptive and distorted picture of what's been represented from the EU. I think the paper itself needs to be corrected, not just the citation. But, I mean, it's going to be distributed, and I think they should work together to make sure that it doesn't rise to the level of deception. Even if other papers are going to come out, this one is going to be distributed as well.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. I mean, certainly, I mean, the IPC obviously is entitled to create their own papers, but certainly, Nicholas, it sounds like if you are willing to have some further dialogue with David, maybe on off list, just the two of you want to have some back channel discussion about any, amendments to the paper that might make it, might keep it consistent with the IPC's views, but inspire a little bit less of criticism from various other channels. That might be a useful endeavor. I think Kathy's right.
Well, let's start with seeing the full quote that David Meyer was referring to, and because, I mean, I wouldn't, of course, agree that that our paper is deceptive. I think it was balanced and objective, but, I mean, I would be happy to continue this discussion on the list or offline with David Meyer, no problem.
Great.
I agree with that.
Thanks, Nicholas and David, and thanks for the suggestion, Kathy.
Yeah.
I'm going to segue now into a unfortunately, very brief discussion of the issues that I see sort of coming, being useful for further discussion on trying to get to a common view of the purpose of WHOIS. The major topics that I see, there's some commonality between the purpose statements, believe it or not, and there's obviously some differences as well. When I look at these, there's a couple key differences that I see that I think would be useful for some further discussion. The first of which is both the IPC and the ISP statements basically say the purpose of WHOIS is to provide accurate, like essentially contact information for the registrant or the domain holder, whereas the non-commercial statement says that the purpose is to provide a link to the responsible party who can act to resolve or reliably pass information to those who can resolve the problems. And it sounds like the BC statement is going to be along the lines of either the registrant or an agent. So I think one area of that would be very useful in terms of coming to a common view would be this question of whether or not we think that the purpose is to provide information about the registrant per se, or whether it's okay to provide either the registrant or an agent, or whether it just has to be someone capable of resolving issues relating to the domain. I think that's one area where further discussion and work is very important. And then the second area that I see coming out of this is the NCUC purpose is limited just to technical problems. And the purpose, it would say that the purpose of WHOIS is related to resolving technical problems. I think that to a certain extent, the ISP statement may reflect that to a certain extent. It sounds like the BC and has a broader set of issues that it believes that WHOIS is intended to, problems or issues that it's intended to help resolve. And the IPC basically, based on the clarification that Nicholas provided earlier, said the data, it's the purpose of WHOIS is simply to provide the data, and regardless of what the purpose is, so any problem essentially. So I guess the second area would be what types of problems or issues is WHOIS intended to resolve would be an area for further discussions. Does anyone else see additional, like, common themes or areas where that we, by resolving a few key questions, we might be able to really nail down a definition of purpose at the task force level?
I think the two you identified are really excellent, and I hope that whoever is taking notes got that very clearly down in a way that, in precisely the way that you formulated it.
Yeah, I'm actually going to, in order to try to facilitate some conversation on the list on these topics, I'm going to try to send out an email each with those questions sort of maybe phrased a little bit more precisely than I was able to manage on the phone.
Yeah.
I have in my notes that the registry constituency also discussed a scope of technical, that the purpose of WHOIS was a technical purpose.
That may be,
that's right.
Regardless, the question would be the same.
Okay.
The question is whether WHOIS is intended to solve technical problems only, or what the range of problems it's intended to resolve. Any other areas where people think it would be useful to discuss? Okay, so what I'm gonna try to do is I will send out threads, I think, to try to initiate conversation on the list of each of those two topics. I think if we can resolve those questions, we will be well on our way to maybe being able to settle this task. And what I'll do is, I think these are very important questions. On our next call, I'll also allocate some time to see where we are, but I think it's very important that we have a majority of this conversation on the list, just given the time constraints. On the call. The other thing that we'll be discussing on our next call would be the voting on the procedure for conflict with national laws. With that, I'd like to wrap up the conversation on the purpose of WHOIS for today, unless anyone else has anything they need to add.
When can we discuss the notice provisions?
Yeah, that's next. If we can wrap up the purpose discussion, then we can proceed to the notice.
Okay.
Okay, so with that in mind, I would like to spend, we have 10 minutes left, to talk about the issue of notice and the notice proposal that's currently before the council. Ross, you had wanted a few minutes here, so I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yeah, I'll make it short and sweet, just so we can actually spend some time talking about it, but I'm seeing various opinions that this recommendation is in fact it constitutes a privacy waiver, and I don't believe that was the intention of this task force, so I would like to get a better sense of whether or not this interpretation is consistent with the intent of the task force or not, and if it's not, then we need to fix that before we, I would say, embarrass ourselves in front of council.
Thanks, Ross. I don't think that topic ever came up during our discussions on the issue. So I certainly don't think that the task force intended for it to be a privacy waiver. Although possible crafty people who created the language, thought about it in advance. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, I wasn't involved at that point in this discussion, so I can't add anything to that. I don't know if there's anybody on this call that was, but.
I think it's a question, this is Milton, I think it's a question of people kind of working unconsciously across purposes.
Mm-hmm.
From our point of view, we would never view notification as being consent, because there's no other domain name system that I know of that you can participate in. And therefore, to say somebody, we're going to do this with your data, and you don't have any choice about it if you're going to get a domain name, because there's only one ICANN, there's only one functioning root that provides global interoperability, and therefore, once you've been notified, you've consented, is to me a travesty. And the legal term for it, I think, is contract of adhesion. Obviously, we had supported previously the notification simply to let people indeed know what's happening, and that might stimulate the use of some of the privacy-protecting services that registrars are offering, if indeed customers wanted that, and it also might help people be more aware of what's happening and support the ICANN process to make WHOIS policy more rational. But if we're being told that by being presented with notification, people are also waiving their rights, and as the ISP representative said earlier on this call, basically we can do anything with that information as long as we notify you about it. You're basically presenting people with a very stark choice: no domain name at all, or no privacy, or no rights over your information at all. And I don't think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, thanks. So let me ask, we do have some people that were on the previous task force. Like I said, Ross, I don't remember any discussion about any sort of waiver of privacy rights resulting as a result of the notice. But
yep.
Certainly, if anyone that was involved with the previous work remembers anything different, now's the time to speak.
Well, Jordan, Nicholas here. I was an alternate member on the previous task force, and I think what we discussed was basically more simple than that, and I don't recall anyone mentioning privacy waiver or anything. Basically, the idea was just that in the registrar accreditation agreements, I think it's provision 3774 and 3775, there is clear languages that says that a registrar is required to notify a registrant about WHOIS and what it means, basically, and that he's also required to obtain consent from the registrant for the publication of the personal data in the WHOIS database.
But I think the concern of the task force is that right now, this notification made to the registrant is anything but conspicuous and very often hidden in a long text in fine print that basically the registrant would just click OK and think, OK, let's go to the next stage. And I think members of the task force felt that it was useful to make this notification procedure more conspicuous so that a registrant actually knows what he's signing up to.
Yeah, I think the one other bit I would add, Ross, is that we actually originally also looked at ways of improving the process by which registrants consented to that use as well, and we explicitly removed that and made it only apply to notice and removed any discussion of how consent was gained for the use of the data.
Jordan, this is Kathy.
Yeah, Kathy.
I think Task Force 1 may have had one intent, but I think they did something else. I've gotten absolutely clear opinions from people who were not part of the Task Force 1 or even part of the Joint Task Force, people like Mark Rotenberg, the director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center, who say unambiguously this will be viewed as a waiver. And I think we have to do something now because clearly that wasn't the intent of the task force. But by bringing this out, we're now dealing heavily with the language of the EU Privacy Directive. And Article 7 says, member states shall provide that personal data may be processed only if A, the data subject has unambiguously given his consent. And that's exactly what this notice provision is going to be interpreted as. We already see it in the ISP comments. This is what the intellectual property constituency will take forward as well. That by holding this out, by providing a separate notice, we are making absolutely clear that there's unambiguous consent. And in doing so, we're forcing people to waive their privacy rights. This is a contract of adhesion. They're not able to negotiate. They will be deemed as waiving their privacy rights. And that's just not what we intended. I think we have to stop the process now.
So let me ask this to Ross and Kathy. If we agree that the intent of the task force was not to create some sort of privacy waiver, what would you view would be an appropriate step to? I mean, this is really a council issue now. So either do you think it's just a matter of communicating that to the council, or do we need to somehow refine the recommendation and ask for the council to send the issue back to us?
Yeah, I think we should be proactive with this, Jordan. I think we should request that recommendation back based on this on these new opinions. If I understand first principles correctly, we're looking at clarifying a process for users, not give up rights of users. So until we can either A, clarify whether or not this opinion is valid, I have no reason to believe it's not, and B, if it is, what we're going to do to amend this proposal to make it consistent, we should simply just proceed on the status quo, which means we need to reach out to the council, explain to them what's gone on, and tell them how we're going to deal with it moving forward. I don't think we should wait for council to push it back to us. I think we should take it back. It's never been done before, but...
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking, actually our new terms of reference don't even include this item. So technically speaking, this task force isn't even chartered to deal with this issue. Let me ask this, other than sort of the procedural issues, which we can think about maybe a little bit separately, does anyone else have any thoughts on the, whether they agree with Ross's approach, that if there are concerns about this, that we should revisit the issue at the task force level?
Obviously, I totally agree with Ross. I think we should be proactive. We have to be... as far as I know, everybody that I can recall as being part of the task force that did the notification recommendation, and that was the combined 1 and 2, right?
Yeah.
That came out of those people are all here. I mean, not necessarily on this call, but all part of this combined task force. So I don't think there's a problem with that. And again, if it's simply a legal issue that wasn't properly discussed at the time, and we need to, you know, pull it out of the process before people make a decision without understanding it.
I'd like to add to that. I was on the task force too, and I don't remember it being discussed either.
And it's almost like it was purposely not discussed, which is not good. Somebody knew that this interpretation existed, but they didn't mention it.
Yeah, I don't know whether we could make that conclusion, Paul, but I think...
I was on the task force, and I don't remember anybody saying anything.
Well, no, I agree that we didn't discuss it. I don't know whether I don't know, because Kathy, like, for example, your opinion came from someone on the... with privacy interests, right? It's not like it was a...
someone who's...
You discovered a document from some nefarious anti-privacy organization that we dug up, right? Someone from a privacy organization actually looked at this after the fact and made this opinion. Is that correct?
Someone who's an expert on notice and waiver, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So,
I mean, that's...
Well, okay, we should recall it.
Can I make a... That maybe the timing is an issue. I don't think anybody disagrees with notice overall. And I think the idea of pulling it back is a good one. Not that anyone's going to reverse the notice, but let's wait until the end of the process. Maybe it would be better to tell the council that before going forward with this type of notice, let's go through the rest of it, the purpose, the contacts, make whatever decisions the task forces are going to recommend and the council will adopt, and then adopt a notice provision on it. Maybe the timing is just wrong on this. Let's pull it back so we don't waive anything unintentionally and then bring it forward again. Promise that we'll bring it forward again once we've decided the other issues that are involved.
Right.
Does that make sense? So it's just timing.
I mean, I think that's a reasonable approach as well. Does anyone else have any views on this? So what I would propose is that I would draft a letter to Bruce and to the council, and basically say, we recently become aware of this issue relating to the recommendation on notice, and we believe it wasn't previously considered by the task force, and it is an important issue, and that we would encourage that the council either defer voting on this until the task force has had an opportunity to consider it, or B, until the other task force work has been completed and this can be adopted as part of a broader range of policy recommendations. Does anyone have a problem with that?
Gordon, Nicholas here.
Yeah, go ahead, Nicholas.
Okay with that if you present it as a question of timing, that it might perhaps not be appropriate at this time to put this forward, but if the suggestion is to withdraw one of the only things that this task force has managed to accomplish in the last 18 months, I think we would just basically be making fool of ourselves. Because I'm surprised how today we seem to put this this draft basically upside down on its head and claim that it's something that is potentially restricting or increasing the privacy of the individual, when actually the only thing that this recommendation was looking at was clarifying an obligation that is already included in the registrar accreditation agreement, and give the impression to the GNSO that we're basically just fudging the issue, I think we'll just be making fool of ourselves. So if the task force feels that we should write to Bruce, let's make it a question of timing and not a question of withdrawing the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think, Nicholas, the intent is to... The basically, the actions that I would request are either that the council specifically looks into this issue of whether it constitutes a waiver by taking a look at it at the council, or referring it back to the task force to look at this question, or simply that the council may choose to elect to defer adoption of this until a broader set of policies are adopted simultaneously.
Sorry, I was late, but I didn't realize the call had started. Can you just tell me what the topic is?
Yeah, I actually have a hard stop in like 2 minutes, so unfortunately I'm going to have to drop off this call momentarily, so we may have to just finalize this discussion on list. But the topic, Marilyn, was Ross had raised the issue that there seems to be an emerging view that the topic on notice somehow constitutes a waiver of a registrant's privacy interest, which is not a question that we had sort of considered at all within task force one and two, and whether or not we ought to reach out to council to make them aware of this emerging issue and ask that they either consider it or defer action on it until it's been considered.
Jordan, this is David. If I could just ask, because I joined the call late as well, so missed some of the background information, but since there is the requirement to give notice in the accreditation agreement, I'm just a bit confused as to why this is coming up now with that existing obligation. And the point was to just make notice more easily identifiable by the registrant prior to their registration.
Yeah. So David, I agree that was the intent. I think we all agree that was the intent. I guess just a couple of things. I mean, two things sort of spurred, I guess, Ross's concern. Number one is, I guess, like Kathy just mentioned that she's received an opinion that it may actually constitute a waiver. And secondly, it came up in our discussion of the ISP's constituency statement, which also indicated that because registrants are notified of the use of their data, that they, you know, whatever we do with it is okay.
Could I also take a stab at answering, David? This is Milton. Oh, yep. You gotta get off. But David, the original registrar accreditation contract was not a consensus policy. It was basically handed down by the U.S. Commerce Department and ICANN staff in 1999.
That's actually not correct, Milton. There is consensus policy on the registrar accreditation agreement.
There is. That part of the registrar accreditation agreement was not consensus policy.
There are specific board resolutions passing the registrar accreditation agreement as consensus policy.
Yeah, so Jordan,
sorry to interrupt. Let me just finish my statement.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
Retroactively, people have declared it to be a consensus policy.
In 1999.
It did not emerge from the GNSO, which did not really exist in 1999. The registrar accreditation contract dates to February 1999 and was actually implemented later that year. It did not emerge from the GNSO. Now, the reason this is happening now, David, is because your constituency and others allied with it have made an enormous deal out of this notification as a form of waiver and consent. That's why. So you shouldn't be surprised.
Jordan, it's Marilyn. I'm sorry for being late, but I think clearly this is a big enough topic that we need to take it back to council and also seek probably some legal advice. I understand the position that Kathy has, obviously the task force can't deal with this, and we probably do need to take it back and then see what we do with it, whether we put it on the shelf or we take the discussion further or we seek further legal advice, et cetera.
Yeah.
I agree with
Marilyn.
Right.
I think that's right, Marilyn. I think it's an issue that we didn't previously consider that sounds like has now become an issue that we ought to consider. So what I'm going to do is I'll draft up an email that I'll propose to send to Bruce and the council for review of the task force members, and glad to take suggestions, but if we get general support within the task force, and it sounds like we have it broadly, then we'll send off an email to Bruce and ask him to give the task force a chance to reconsider the issue, or perhaps just defer action on it until the issue's, you know, been either packaged up in a broader set of policy initiatives or other consideration of the topic has been made. So I'm going to send that out. With that, I'm actually very late to a meeting already. I need to drop off, but we will have another call in 2 weeks, and I will be sending out a number of emails today to try to jumpstart a bunch of conversation on the list, including on this last, I think, very important topic.
Thank you, Jordan.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jordan.
Bye.
Bye-bye.